Hello and welcome to the 19th episode of the TFG1 podcast. I am TFG1 Mike with
Michael Wilson.
Yes, and this is episode 19, and I had the great honor of getting some promo clips from Mr. Stan Bush, which you will hear him introducing episode 19 next.
I'm Stan Bush, and I fully endorse the TFG1 podcast coming up today on episode 19. You'll hear reviews from Webworld, Carnage in C Minor, Forever is a Long Time Coming, Flight or Flee, and Thief in the Night with TFG1 Mike and Michael Wilson.
Hello and welcome to the 19th episode of the TFG1 podcast, recorded, what's Friday's date? The 19th of June, that's right, the 19th of June, and with me is
Michael Wilson.
Please enjoy. Yes, this is the TFG1 podcast, episode 19. I am joined by Michael Wilson. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, this is going to be a very fast general chat. There isn't too much going on other than Geekcast Radio has been taking off. We do have several bios up. I don't think yours is up yet, but it will be eventually. It might be, but I don't think the picture is up. I'm not really sure. I know Steve had said that he needed to learn how to insert the pictures on that, so... but the site I think it looks fairly good for the style that it is. Each show has its own category. He still has to add all the old episodes of like ATTF and TFG1, so those aren't added in yet, but the latest episodes are there. Let's see, two big things I want to bring up: Skype stalkers and dental work. I have two people that are on my Skype that one of them apparently found me by searching for Transformers fans, and every time he is on and I'm on, you know, usually I leave Skype on just in case somebody needs to get in touch with me. I don't really use it as a messenger. I don't use it like I use AIM or Yahoo or anything like that, at least not all the time. And he has the overpressing need every single time my online status is online to contact me for no apparent reason.
Okay.
Yes.
I've never had a stalker, so I can't really compare notes.
Oh, yeah.
If I did, though, she would be hot.
It's a good thing your wife doesn't listen to this show.
Well, yeah, she would be hot, and then my wife would go beat her ass. But,
yeah. Good save. Dental work. Last week, I actually mentioned this in Tooncast Episode 3, which will be out tomorrow. Today's Tuesday. Whatever, I don't know. Or it will be Tuesday eventually. Hell, I don't know. Wednesday, Tooncast Episode 3 will be out. I mentioned it in there. I woke up one day last week, or over the weekend, with a piece of chipped tooth inside my mouth. I don't know how it happened. I have no idea, but yes, I'm in severe need of some dental work, and I hate the dentist. Yeah.
Yeah, that would suck. Does it hurt like right now?
Not at the moment, but it did then. I woke up and I'm like, wait, what is this?
Ow.
Like, oh shit, that's not good. So, what's been going on with you, sir?
Well, you know, housework. Not in the sense of me cleaning and cooking and, like, wiping down tables and such, but as in we're doing the siding, and it's almost done. We're getting into the final stretches.
That's good.
I got Transformers Animated Skywarp.
Oh, yay. And actually, you have one to still get, don't you? Other than the yet-to-be-released ones. You mentioned it on Facebook or Twitter. You have yet to get Shadowblade Megatron.
Galvatron.
Megatron.
Animated Galvatron. Yeah.
It says Shadow Blade Megatron is what it says on the package.
That's the official name, yeah. Derek Wyatt refuses to name him Galvatron, so he's Shadow Blade Megatron. And he looks really cool. I'd like to have him. I just haven't bought him yet. You know, maybe I'll hold off and pick them up when they go on sale or clearance or something.
I like the leader class, the original leader class, better. I don't know. I just don't like the... If the Shadow Blade one was more purple and less black, I would probably like it. But, you know, to be in more of the Galvatron-type colors.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like the original better. And while we're on the topic of toys, since some of our episodes today feature Cyclonus predominantly, I brought out Universe Cyclonus.
Oh.
And just, he's extremely, because I've rewatched all the episodes that we're going to be talking about, the toy is extremely show accurate to G1. I mean, super extremely. Where his cockpit folds back on his back, it looks just like that in G1. Actually, I don't have my E-Hobby Galvatron out here, but I do, when I have Cyclonus on the shelf, I have him right underneath Galvatron's tread, so you can pretty much do a good old size comparison as far as how big E.B. Galvatron is compared to Deluxe Universe Cyclonus.
Yeah.
And he's just an awesome figure. I think I like the robot mode better than the jet mode, but yeah. Anyway, so we have any other thoughts on general stuff?
No, everything's cool here.
All right, we're going to get into some episodes today.
Cyber sedation should be taking effect by now.
And then what?
We tried to get him to talk about his problems.
Galvatron, don't fight it. Just say whatever comes to mind.
Kill, smash, destroy.
Yes, go on.
Rend! Mangle! Distort!
This is stupid! Let's get him out of here!
Give it a chance! I'll destroy everything here! Everything! And then I'll destroy the Autobots!
Yes, tell me about the Autobots.
I hate the Autobots! I hate Cyclonus! And I'm not very fond of you!
Yes, we're going to start out today's episode with Web World, an episode I absolutely fucking hated, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's see here. Web World's little synopsis from the booklet. Swindle, Motormaster, and Laserbeak present Cyclonus with an ultimatum. Galvatron's rage must be tempered, or the Decepticons will revolt. Seeing an opportunity to remove a wild card from the equation, a crafty Quintesson tells Cyclonus of a planet called Torculon, where mentally unstable individuals may go for treatment. Now, Cyclonus must somehow trick his leader into traveling to this planet. Yeah, Web World.
You know what this is? It's the Cyber One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, a very giant fucking cuckoo's nest.
Have you ever seen it?
Yeah,
I've seen it. With Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you have to see it to actually make the connection, but that was my thought, is this is totally One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, this wasn't an episode that I really enjoyed. It wasn't one that I can just... Like, there are some episodes that I can just pop in and just watch just for the sheer enjoyment, like Return of Optimus Prime two-parter, you know, some of the previous ones from previous, from Season 1 and Season 2. This is not one of those. This is one of those painstakingly, you know, only if I have to watch it will I watch it episodes. First of all, the Autobots are only in one scene. I don't even know. I don't even know what else to say other than just to go into my notes. And the first note, obviously, is Galvatron is mad in this episode. If you look at this episode and the next episode, Carnage in C Minor, Galvatron, Cyclonus, and pretty much every Decepticon, the colors are very off. Cyclonus looks like his Henkei universe version in this episode. And I know Henkei, I don't know if Henkei was around back then, but that's what it reminded me of when I rewatched it today. I was like, wait, it's a light purple girly Cyclonus in the show. What the hell?
I think when Henkei designs were made, they probably were using this episode or a similar episode as their color inspiration.
That could be. This episode is just fucking loony. I don't know why I wrote that note, but it just is. Nothing makes sense. Having Cyclonus fill out all the forms and saying, here, this is your copy, he just tears it up. He doesn't care.
This is very bureaucratic.
I know.
We have a copy for therapeutics, a copy for treatment, here's a copy just in case he dies in the process, but just sign it, don't worry about it.
It was very, very off the wall. Cyclonus tricking Galvatron is just awesome. He's sniveling, but he's not as bad as Starscream. I mean, Cyclonus is loyal, but he does have his trickery side to him.
I think Cyclonus had his best interests at heart.
I guess.
I mean, he really wants Galvatron to be better. He knows that the Decepticon cause is done for unless Galvatron is sane.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when has Galvatron ever been sane?
Well, that's the problem. And they come right out and, or the doctors, I should say, come right out and say, ooh, he had a lava bath for too long, didn't he?
Yeah. I did like that connection, though. I didn't think that they would do that, and I did pick up on that, and I did like that continuity connection. As I said before, this is basically an all-Decepticon episode. The Autobots are only in one scene. There really isn't... I really didn't... When I first watched it, even when I watched it earlier today, I don't have that much to say about it. It was very strange seeing Galvatron being crazy, and I don't mean...
crazier than usual?
Well, no, I don't mean just mad with power. I mean psychotically nuts. I mean, he's off his fucking rocker.
See, that's kind of what I associate with Galvatron, though.
Yeah, see, I don't, though, because... And I know we're going to do a whole bunch of comparisons between Megatron and Galvatron. Megatron's plans almost always failed because of either something he did or something Starscream did to affect the wrongness of the plan and it not turning out okay. And Megatron... Sometimes his plans were just plain stupid. Galvatron has more of an attitude to where he... You know, wants everything destroyed now. He wants to rule the universe now.
Galvatron has no plan. It's, oh look, something shiny. I think I'll go kill it. And off he goes. It's not, I'm going to create this elaborate weather-changing device, and then I'm going to, you know, it's nothing like that. It's, Autobots? Did somebody say Autobot? I think I need to go kill them now. And off he goes. I mean, whereas... You know, the original Megatron was, you know, cunning and brilliant and a strategic genius. He just had bad luck. Whereas Galvatron is completely insane and it cannot hold his conversation long enough to create a strategic plan.
I kind of agree with that. I like my explanation better, but I agree. okay. Do you have anything else to say as far as synopsis-wise?
Synopsis-wise, no. I just had a few thoughts.
Okay. What are they?
Are we going to jump directly
to thoughts? No. Okay. I thought you meant you had a few more according to the synopsis, but... All right. Now we're going to get into our thoughts. And now for our thoughts on Webworld. You have more than I do, so take it away, sir.
Oh, well, I just had a list of observations.
Yes.
The very first thing in the beginning, Soundwave. Soundwave didn't use his vocoder. Frank Welker wasn't doing Soundwave. He was doing Dr. Claw.
Yes, I was going to point that out, and I did notice that.
I totally picked that up.
I did notice that. In the second viewing earlier today.
Yeah. No, I thought it was interesting. In a later episode, Soundwave gets his vocoder back. But here, he's one line, and it's not encoded at all. It's just Dr. Claw.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of weird. But, I mean, you know, if you're a Dr. Claw fan, it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah, I agree with you as far as the Autobots only being in one scene. They were there just long enough to show that Galvatron has no strategy, no plans. He just sees something shiny and jumps on it. But in the process, Sludge kicked some ass. Sludge never gets to kick ass, but you know he can. He's the big Dinobot.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was kind
of... And we should note that even though for the most part of Season 3, since Galvatron has come back, he has been nuts, he gets better and he does have better plans. Rebirth, for example. His plan is basically just like Megatron's in The Ultimate Doom, where he is going to take Cybertron to Earth and destroy Earth. Which, you know, we'll get to Rebirth down the line, but I mean, you know, I just wanted to say he does get better and he does have some plans after this episode.
She turned me into a newt. I got better.
She turned me into... Huh?
Never mind. All right, my Monty Python references stop now.
It is better, considering I've never seen Monty Python stuff.
Oh, what kind of geek are you? All right, yeah, I'm taking away your geek cred.
Yeah,
right
yeah,
now.
Whatever.
While you were watching this episode, did any Metallica songs come to mind?
No, because I don't listen to them that much.
Oh, Jesus.
No,
God.
No,
geek cred for you.
I like it. I just want to make it clear. I do like Metallica. I do listen to some of their songs. I don't listen to them often enough.
All right, well, I only like the old school Metallica. So the newer stuff, or I should say anything after and including And Justice for All, I don't really like so much. But the older stuff, back before they sold out, like Sanitarium from the Master of Puppets album, or CD or DVD, or CD. Sanitarium was running heavily through my mind during this whole episode.
Yeah. I could see it, but yeah, I haven't heard it in a while, so I wouldn't know. I can't really comment.
All right, well, I won't sing it here. Yeah, the doctors. So I'm thinking, you know, interstellar sanitarium doctors should, you know, be kind of eggheady with lab coats, right? And this is like Beastman.
Yeah.
So Skeletor has Beastman on loan to the interstellar sanitarium. It's like, these don't look like doctors. They sound like doctors.
Yeah.
They sound like business people.
Actually, I'm sorry to cut you off. I think they were the same voices of the Quintessons. Some of them were.
Okay. Yeah, I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very business-like in the sense that here's your 15 copies and thumbprint them all.
Yeah.
Cyclonus doesn't read the fine print whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. He actually rips it up.
Yeah, well, yeah, see what happens when they rip out the fine print.
Yep.
The Sigmund Freud alien, I totally dug him. As, my first degree is actually in psychology. So we've got the Sigmund Freud alien saying, tell me about your mother.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. How do you feel about this? And Galvatron's like, I'm going to fuck your mother. he's just wanting to kill everybody. And the nice thing is he does get... Every time they put him through some type of therapy, he gets out of it and just raises hell. You know, so score one for Galvatron. Even though he's crazy, he's still pretty powerful.
Well, once the episode keeps going on and he gets out of the last one, after they attach his mind to the planet's mind...
The Alia.
Yeah. Ooh, that was gross. Anyway, he figures out the planet's secret. So, we have to kind of go back and say he's not all just crazy. I mean, he does have, even though his actions are, at least he is thinking about destroying the planet. Even though it is destroying something.
His one thought is, what can I blow up right now?
Yeah.
Even at the end, he's like, I think I've blown up enough. And Cyclonus is like, whoa, they might rebuild. Well, maybe I haven't blown up enough then. I think I need to blow up some more. But while they were trying to fix you know, Galvatron. I was, well, again, the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest reference. I was waiting for the lobotomy. I'm like, where is the lobotomy? They're going to lobotomize him. And the doctor says, it's time for the maximal intervention. And I'm thinking, of course, Beast Wars.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to bring in Gary Chalk and he's going to beat the shit out of him. But no, I mean, I knew that I knew they weren't going to lobotomize him. But, you know, they bring in the Alia to wire him up. And I'm thinking, so the Alia are kind of like a living ice pick that they're just going to jam into his eye sockets and swivel around his frontal lobes a little bit, right?
Ooh.
You don't know how lobotomies work, do you?
Yeah, no, I agree. Just that description, sounds disgusting.
Yeah. But what's interesting that there's a long and varied and very interesting history of lobotomies, but I won't go into that now. The thing that I was wondering toward the end is, you know, what if they succeed? What if they fix Galvatron and suddenly we have a much more powerful version of Megatron on our hands?
Well, see if they...
You know, that didn't happen.
Well, see, if they had fixed Galvatron, I'm betting that they would have taken him back to Megatron, and in every Transformers fanboy out there that hated the change would be now fucking vindicated because you had Megatron back, you bastards.
That's right. Wait. I hear the collective fanboy squeal of millions of Megatron fans. It's a disturbance in the force. I think it's fanboy squeals.
Yes. Do you have any more notes? Do you have anything else?
You know, I think Webworld kind of came and went. I did dig it to a certain extent. There was a lot of little tiny gags thrown in. Like the little tongue alien that says mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate it as much as you did. I saved my hate for Carnage and
C-Minor. See, I love that episode. But anyway, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute. But
we'll get
if
to
I was
next.
Giving, if we were doing a grading scale, this one would get a very, very big goose egg zero from me.
I dug it. I liked the story. Animation could have been better, but yeah, I liked it.
So next up, it will be Carnage in C Minor.
Very well, stand by to receive the harmony.
Soundwave, are you getting this?
I am.
Never mind the harmony.
No! Only one third of the harmony.
I have only part of the secret. Basso Profundo and Zebop Scandana share the rest.
Zebop, don't! He's recording your part of the harmony.
Soundwave, playback! Soundwave. Much, much better.
Okay, up next we have Carnage in C Minor, and according to the little booklet, a strange and powerful sonic weapon cuts through space and destroys a huge comet, attracting the attention of both the Autobots and Decepticons. They trace the source of the weapon to a sound-based culture of Harmonix on a nearby planet. The weapon itself is created from the combined singing of the three citizens, and Galvatron quickly realizes he and Soundwave can harness this weapon for the Decepticons if only they can record all three of its components. First of all, again, if we were doing a scale, this one gets a 10 from me, just because it was so cool seeing the blaster Soundwave fight. Let's see, the first thing I've noticed is that Brawn is apparently alive. See picture on the PredaconEmpire.com forums under
the
screenshots.
Yeah. It looked like Huffer and Brawn were fighting alongside someone Constructicon.
Yeah, Brawn is alive, so apparently he didn't die in the movie. Okay, I believe it was Microbots way back in episode 10 of the podcast here, but I'm not really sure. But this is the second fucking episode that Perceptor uses his microscope lens as a gun. I have never seen Perceptor before these two, the episode way before and this one now, I've never seen him use the microscope as a gun. He's always had a pistol or some sort of rifle like blaster and everybody else does.
Right, makes not just a gun, but a gun powerful enough to blow up Devastator.
Oh, I know it.
Blow him into pieces.
I know it.
I'm just shaking my head like, what the hell?
Yeah, I even put in the notes, what the fuck?
Yeah.
this episode is basically a blaster Soundwave-centric episode, which I truly, truly enjoy. And I'm going to get this out of the way now just because they are two of my favorite characters from the original show. I truly believe if the people had gone in and done an actual continuation of this into whatever happened in Headmasters, this would have kicked Headmasters' ass. I actually consider this the Blaster Soundwave showdown more than I do than what happened in Headmasters. I wish that they would have put the reformatting of Blaster and Soundwave into this one, but unfortunately they didn't.
Strong words.
Yes, yes. I don't care. That's my opinion, and fuck everybody else.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had issues with this entire episode. I just wasn't really pleased with it. Now, we'll get into that later.
This episode is all about music, in case you couldn't tell from the title.
Oh, you know what? I almost forgot. Since this episode is about music, I think that we should do the entire review in song.
No, because I don't sing.
This episode is full of crap.
Okay, then.
If I could do that with, like, a Patrick Stewart accent, that would be awesome.
God.
That would kick ass.
Oh, God.
This podcast would get such high ratings.
Like an
army
doesn't.
I'm Patrick Stewart, and I shall sing this review.
As I said a second ago, this serves as the G1 US series battle between Blaster and Soundwave. Woohoo! The episode ends with Magnus saying that the people of the Harmonic Planet must learn to accept their differences in order to have true harmony. The animation was pretty good in this episode.
What?
Well, with making the sound visual.
No. Okay, first of all, the animation was awful. The size comparisons were way off. We've got scenes with Broadside and Superion being the exact same size as Ultra Magnus and Perceptor. That happened a lot. Apparently, Opera World changes everybody's relative size. I mean, didn't you catch that a few times?
The only thing I caught was the fact that Broadside picks up Galvatron, and Broadside's like four times bigger than Galvatron.
Broadside popped up a lot here.
Yeah,
but he kept changing sizes. The first time I saw him, which I thought was terribly cool, is you see the Constructicons merge in a Devastator, and then an aircraft carrier falls on their head. That was awesome.
Yeah,
but that was my first thought was, it's Broadside. He didn't get blown up after all.
I told you so.
Yay. You told me he got blown up.
No, I did not. I told you he showed up in Five Faces of Darkness. I didn't say he got blown up. You said he got blown up.
That was the one that got blown up. But there were a lot of characters in this episode.
Yeah, there were.
Hotspot shows up, and I'm like, well, if Hotspot's here, where's the rest of the Constructicons? Where's the rest of the Protectobots? At the end of the episode, whoop, there's Defensor. Where'd they come from? I don't know. They just happened to be there.
Yeah, they just kind of showed up.
Yeah, but I mean, at least the aliens are human-sized in this one.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you end up lately with 40-foot-tall aliens. Lots of them.
Yes, the reference Chaos.
Yeah, except, well, I mean, you look at the Skugzoid, you know, he's got to be like Godzilla size. I mean, he's kind of like the wimp of the universe, but if he showed up on Earth, it'd be like, Gojira! Everybody running through the streets of Tokyo.
What was that movie? Oh, I forget. There is a movie. It was one of the parody movies. He goes, one of the Japanese guys go in something, he goes, "It's Godzilla!" "No, it's not, but it's a reasonable facsimile of Godzilla." Or something, to the point of where, due to copyright laws, we can't say it's Godzilla, but it looks like him.
That's right. Toho International would kick our ass. It's not Godzilla, goddammit. It's something that looks kind of like him. It's kind of like Chaos. It kind of looks like Godzilla, but it's not really. He's glowing, which means he can't be Godzilla. We're sorry, Toho. We didn't mean to make him look like Godzilla.
Do you have anything else for the synopsis?
No, just some random thoughts.
Okay, we're going to get into our thoughts then. All right, this is our thoughts on Carnage in C Minor. What'd you think?
Well, I mentioned earlier, I wasn't terribly thrilled with the animation. I liked that there were a lot of characters, but it got really, really confusing. And, you know, I agree, I liked seeing Blaster and Soundwave face off, but at the same time, the sum of the parts, you know, didn't really do it for me.
Yeah, I gotta say, as I said in the synopsis of the episode, I wish it would have been a true knockdown, drag 'em out fight between the two of them, and then having time pass and having them reformatted into Twin Cast and Sound Blaster like it was in the Headmaster series. I wish they would have done that in the U.S. series.
Only the Japanese are that brave. You wouldn't see that with Hasbro. Not after the flack they got from the movie, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they did have Shockwave kill Blur in TFA, bastards. Anyways.
Anyways. Derek White and the Japanese are the only ones with enough balls to kill people.
After a while, the melodies kind of got to me, like them singing the entire thing, like each syllable for the alien race.
Everything they said.
Yeah, was in song. It's almost worse than what you don't like Blaster for, his rhyming.
but it's like the tape players have to translate for everybody else.
And I thought that was kind of cool though, because it gives them it gives them purpose. I mean, it's like having Worf translate whatever the hell species he is, Klingon, to Picard. I mean, it gives them something to do.
But the Klingons are speaking Klingon. They're like walk walk patalk. What do you say, Worf? And Worf says, "He says you have a small human penis. His penis is much larger than yours."
Oh, God.
Whereas, you know, here it's like, "Hello, it's a nice day we're having." And Ultra Magnus says to Blaster, "What'd he say?" "He said we're having a nice day."
Well, that's not exactly fair.
And I'm thinking
fair.
Ultra Magnus can't understand what he just said. I'm really shocked here.
That's not exactly fair, because they were talking about where Allegra was and everything else, so it wasn't like just general stuff. It was more specific than what you're saying, but I still say it gives Blaster and Soundwave a purpose to stick around.
You don't see people standing around asking for translations from Wheelie.
Oh, God.
What the hell did Wheelie just say? Well, he rhymes. It's hard to understand. Let's ask Blaster. Blaster knows.
God.
Blaster rhymes too. He'll understand what he's saying.
This episode is going to go into a giant fucking rat hole. I can already tell.
No. here's the thing: is not only do they sing to communicate and to fight, you know, or should say defend themselves, but they also sing to fix people. So if you don't have any Junkions available, well, that's okay. We can sing, and they fix people by singing.
If I was using Pamela Call Recorder right about now, I would put in Rekgar's good as new 90-day warranty, you know, whatever. God.
That's right. I just got one more thought here, and that was, towards the end, something happens that I think Decepticon Crescendo would appreciate a great deal. And that was Blaster grabs hold of Soundwave's crotch.
Yeah.
Totally crotch grab. I think he was going for like a wrestling move there, but it looked like a crotch grab to me.
The whole time when they're wrestling around on the when they're locked in battle, it looks like they're fucking dancing. I'm sorry.
Do you like gladiator movies, Johnny?
Oh crap. All right. So, I think we're going to move on to the next episode.
Will you come? I'm taking a risk bringing you to the Warrens. But with the final assault on Hive City planned for dawn, we need all the help we can get. Odd, though, you don't look like slaves.
Slaves? Who's a slave? We're not slaves. What makes you think we're slaves?
You wear the same brand we all do. The hated mark of our servitude to the Quints. For a million years, it has been our symbol of shame. A3 says we must make it a symbol of freedom.
A3's your main man?
Our leader, yes. With his coder remote device, we could freeze the Guardians in their tracks and drive the Quints from the city they forced us to build. Then slaves all over Cybertron would rise up to claim their freedom. But if we fail...
Blaster, we're in the past, when the Quintessons still ruled Cybertron and the robots were their slaves.
It will be a difficult battle. As you see, we're not warriors. We're workers, scientists, technicians. But we all want the same thing. Freedom from the Quints.
The past? How do we get to the past? How can we even be in the past if what's past is past? And what's the point? The real point is there's no future in the past.
That's it. Don't you see? If the Quintessons could stop the Autobot Rebellion in the past, it'd change the future. They'd still be the masters of Cybertron, and we'd be their slaves. Beta, this A3, where is he?
Missing. I was looking for him when I found you. There's not much choice. Time is running out. With or without A3, we have to attack at dawn. Will you help?
Try and stop us! I have failed you, Rodimus. It is finished.
No, Superion!
You must live. That I may be born. Alpha Trion A3.
Your friends want you home. Go, now.
Yeah, but...
No time for talk. We thank you for your help, but you must go at once.
Okay, I guess we can trust you to win this one. After all, you already did.
Rodimus, we must close the time window, or the consequences...
I know, Perceptor. I know.
Burr, it just hit me. A3. A for Alpha, 3 for Trion. You don't think...
What? That was the guy who created Optimus Prime? He was the father of the Autobots? You gotta be kidding.
Up next is Forever is a Long Time Coming. And according to the little booklet, detecting unusual chronal energy patterns emanating from an asteroid field, Perceptor, Blaster, Blur, and Retgar discover a Quintesson scientist activating a strange device. This device, the Time Window, offers a portal to the Cybertron of 11 million years ago. But before the Autobots can stop this mystery scheme, they mistakenly pass through the window, and A3 is disoriented and distressful. Autobot appears. Will A3's disappearance from the past spell doom for the Autobot's future? I love this episode. I'm sorry, I do. It's fucking great. Because even though when we've seen Alpha Trion before be old, and we all know that A3 is Alpha Trion, and of course the Autobots don't figure it out till the end of the episode, but even though we've seen him as old before, it's nice seeing that they're going Okay, if you take this episode and you take Wardon, the aerial bots went 9 million years into the past. This episode is going 2 years beyond that. So this was...
Million.
Well, okay, 9 million, 9 million, 11 million, it's 2 years, it's 2 million years, whatever, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, yeah. I'm just saying that, to me, 9 million years for the Great War, you would assume that the beginning of time would be like 18 million years ago, as opposed to, oh, just a couple million before that.
We start this episode, as I said, with Blaster, Blur, and Perceptor, and a few other ones flying in the space asteroid. Let's see, Blaster and the others get trapped 11 million years in the past, while A3 is brought through to the present time. With the time window open, it's spreading chronal energy throughout the universe, and it's altering time as it goes. I thought this was pretty cool. A lot of the scenes that they showed, like with Wheelie winning the race over and over and over again, and it not actually finishing, like time is repeating itself. There was one where Marissa becomes a baby.
It was the nude Marissa Fairborn scene. She was topless there.
Dirty old man.
Well, it's not quite the same thing. You know, she was like two there.
Yeah. One of my favorite things in this episode is at one point in the battle, Superion is literally in two places at once, and he sees that A3 is Alpha Trion, and he figures it out, and Superion actually saves the day. I thought that the animation was awesome in this one. I think this has the best animation out of the ones that we're going to be reviewing today.
Yeah, it's not saying much for the ones that we're reviewing today, but yeah, the animation was very good.
Uh-huh.
With a few exceptions.
Yes, and as...
I'll
yeah, and this is probably, out of all the episodes today, this one is my favorite. Out of all the ones that we're talking about in this episode of the TF1 podcast. Do you have any thoughts on the synopsis?
What do you mean, as far as synopsis?
Well, yeah, as far as the actual story.
Synopsis?
Yeah, it's okay. Fine, we know.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking, you know, technically they could have stayed in the past. Why was it so important for them to get back to the future? You know, cue Huey Lewis. But, you know, you got to think, most of them are over 9 million years old anyway. And you would think Cup must be well over that. In fact, I'm surprised Cup didn't somehow appear as a young man in the beginning. Sorry, not in the beginning, but 11 million years ago. So you got to think, well, they're all 9 million years old. They're pretty old. You'd think Cup would be substantially older. But, and especially A3, well, Alpha, because he's, like, not only old, he's, like, long beard. Yeah. He's, like, Gandalf old.
Yeah, there will be no Lord of the Rings references in this podcast, goddammit. Anyway.
Sorry.
Anyway.
But, yeah, so to digress, I'd say that you know, they don't really age. As long as they have regular maintenance, they should be okay.
I think the problem with your theory there of them staying in the past is the fact that it's going to mess up the time-space continuum to the point where Alpha Trion is in the young Alpha Trion is in the present day, which would be his future, and they're in the past. It's the same thing with Wardon. I mean, time travel is so finicky, there are so many other ways to describe it, but I don't think they could have stayed in the past.
Well, I think that they were doing just fine while they were there. You know, granted, they needed Alpha Trion's Guardian Freezing Ray in order to really win that battle, but they were pulling it off pretty well.
Yeah.
While they were there.
Yeah, I like all the just all the references to Trion throughout the entire series so far. I mean, this guy's been everywhere.
Yeah.
So, what?
Hey, did you just say space-time continuum?
Yes.
I don't know if that is like a Star Trek term that came, you know, 10, 15 years later after this show was made, but they never once mentioned the term space-time continuum, which I actually have in my notes here is, he didn't actually say space-time continuum. This whole episode screams space-time continuum. And they didn't say it once, so I'm wondering if that was a term that was coined, you know, let's say in the early 90s or so by TNG.
No, because it was said in Back to the Future.
Oh, that would have been about the same time frame. Yep. Yeah. This just screams Back to the Future.
Yeah. So I.
Q. Lewis.
Yes, unfortunately, we don't have any Huey Lewis cues to cue in, so. So I think we're going to move on to our thoughts. All right, now for our thoughts on Forever is a Long Time Coming. Best episode of this podcast episode. That's pretty much my thoughts.
Yeah.
What do you got written down over there?
I like the episode a lot. I enjoyed it. I like it when they go back and you see the golden age of Cybertron.
Again.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've seen it before, but really, you can't see it enough.
I think Orion Pax was in diapers 11 million years ago.
Yeah, again, I think they take some liberties with the time frame, but yeah, okay, we'll buy that this time around.
Yeah.
But, I had some issues with the animation. I mean, this was had very good, very good, excellent animation, with a few exceptions. Like, they don't actually show them entering the time window. They just kind of show the group sailing toward it, and then the next thing you know, they're all kind of complaining. Oh no! They see them sailing toward it. They show a scene of it, like you're supposed to see them floating. Mm-hmm. You know, floating in space into it, but they don't actually show it, and then the next thing you know, they're all complaining, whoa, what happened, where's the door, where's all this, you know, where are we, blah blah blah, but you don't actually see it. And I actually had to rewind it and go back and look again to see if they actually showed them fly into the window.
Yeah, I don't think they do. They show them going in and coming out, but they don't show them flying through it. If you're inside, like, a time warp. I don't think they show that. What else you got?
Well, no, yeah, exactly. Random voices coming from Blaster's chest.
No, it's not random voices.
Well, not random voices, but...
It's Ramhorn. It's Ramhorn and Rewind.
Ramhorn stutters. I love that.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. I'm like, you know, we haven't had a stutterer yet, but it really sets him apart. So I was kind of expecting, you know, kind of a South Park Kenny type thing. Ramhorn going, it's like, wait a minute, we still need Blaster to translate for us from the Carnage and Sea planet.
No, shut the hell up.
What did he say, Blaster?
Shut the hell up.
He said we're having a good day, and he'd like,
Shut up. Wrong.
What did he say? He says he wants to bust Decepticons. Okay.
I noticed in watching this, at one point there is an animation glitch with Blaster and ejecting the tapes. At one point, Rewind comes out the normal way. Well, I mean...
The normal way? And the next time he comes out his butt.
No, shut up.
Abnormal.
Shut up. No, with the tape deck opening and then the tape flying out, well, when Ramhorn... When they're getting ready to attack, when they're getting ready to help the rebels attack the Quintesson base there, and Ramhorn is too anxious to wait... The tape deck actually opens. It doesn't open down. It opens like a refrigerator door from the side.
Did the light turn on?
No, it did not turn on.
Must be busted. There's a little man in there. They wheel across and
turn
the light.
Turn out that light!
He must have been on vacation that day.
Yes.
I forget the name of the fembot they meet when they go back in time.
Oh, crap. I just watched it.
Did they give her a name?
Yes, I just watched it tonight. Oh, God. What was it?
I forget.
I think it was Beta. I think that's what it was.
Beta,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes sense, because you've got Alpha and Beta.
Yeah.
Beta. But she I got a note here that says, she's the Lady J of the fembots. Because she shoots, like, the javelin.
Yeah.
And it explodes. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. That's just dumb. That's why I quit watching G.I. Joe. because Lady J takes out tanks with her javelin.
Well, you could make another reference there if she was named something else. Alpha and Omega.
Oh,
from
wow.
Beast Wars Megatron.
I am Alpha and Omega.
I am the Alpha and the Omega. I'm sorry, I'm doing Sean Connery. Sean Connery is Megatron. I am the Alpha and the Omega.
Oh, my God.
You know what I dig
what?
A lot is the Guardian robots, or as I like to call them, the Omega Sentinels.
Yeah.
I dig the I don't want to say gray, but the silver and blue deco on the I want to say Omega Supremes, but on the Guardian robots.
Yeah, that actually will harken, well, not in the future episodes that we do, but in past episodes that we've done. That's a good continuity thing with Megatron finding the destroyed Guardian robot that doesn't have a head, and I forget which episode it was, in like season 1 or season 2.
Yeah.
But he had used it at one point, and it was the same color as it was in this.
I dig that, though. If you go on to like the Transformers wiki and look up Guardian, though, they show the little dome-headed robot drones that Shockwave was using. But when I think of, you know, Cybertronian Guardian, it's the Omega Sentinels.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
definitely.
Any other thoughts on Forever is a Long Time Coming?
Yeah, I mean the whole Quintesson Terminator thing rang through to me. It's like, well, if we go back in time and kill your mother, that or your father in this case, then you know, then you would never exist. That kind of. Yeah.
It's a good thing we didn't have a Quintesson Skynet episode.
Oh. Well, technically, the whole asteroid here that they have to take care of, that would be a kind of a Quintesson Skynet.
I guess.
But, you know, and what kills me, though, is so we have these green rings that are shooting off into space. Nobody questions what they are. You know, the Quintesson knows what they are. And there he's like, oh my god, we really gotta put a stop to this because this is really gonna fuck with things. But none of the Autobots, and especially, you know, Rodimus, who has the, you know, the collected knowledge and
here we go, more Rodimus bashing.
No, I'm just saying, if you have the collected wisdom of all of the primes before you, you ought to think, giant green ring shooting into space? Well, that looks like it could be bad. And I'm thinking, well, where the hell is Perceptor?
He got damaged. That's the whole thing, remember?
Yeah. He didn't pop up until the end. And then at the last second, it's like, oh, by the way, I'm awake, and you really got to turn that machine off.
We know, Perceptor. We know.
Yeah, it's like, we know, because the hologram Quintesson told us.
Yeah, the giant Quintesson hologram head told us.
Yeah, pay no attention to the man.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, if you look at this episode's overall story, yes, it does have its flaws, but out of all of the ones today that we're discussing, it probably has the best story, I think, out of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's more of a Transformers timeline history than it is just a one-shot, like with Fight or Flee or Thief in the Night or any of the other ones that we've already talked about.
Yeah, we're actually adding to the mythos.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I dig it.
I dig it, too. So we're going to go on to the next episode.
I can't dig it. There is no planet called Paradron. Tell us the truth.
I promise you I'm not lying.
I don't know how to tell you this, Cup, but the detector says he's not lying.
Let's hear the story from the beginning.
Our forefathers fled Cybertron during the Fourth Great War. In order to find a peaceful planet where they would never be found, they went through the vortex. That's why it's not on any of your star charts.
You just got my interest.
Why didn't you tell us they were Decepticons? If you had, we would have been interested earlier instead of later, which would have been better because earlier is always better than later.
Is there something wrong with his timing program?
That's just the way he is.
Sandstorm will have a real nice welcoming party for you later. Right now, we gotta put together a strike force.
We've got a big problem. The Decepticons know that Sandstorm escaped. Therefore, they can hypothesize that we are coming. Therefore, they can make preparations. And therefore, we're going to be walking into a virtual trap. And where does that get us? Dead! That's where.
Don't worry. I've got it handled.
Up next is Fight or Flee. And according to the little booklet, we have Cyclonus and Scourge retreat from a space battle with the aerial bots and inadvertently discover the energy-rich planet of Paradron. Seeking a permanent respite from war, the inhabitants of Paradron are all pacifist Autobots who fled Cybertron eons ago to establish an autonomous colony. Sandstorm, an Autobot triple changer and Paradron citizen, must warn his people of imminent Decepticon invasion before his tranquil world is forever ravaged. And one little note about that synopsis, Ravage is not even seen in this episode. What the hell?
Yes, it was ravaged by... Oh, wait, he wasn't that.
Yeah, exactly. let's see, going with the little notes. in this one, the aerial bots are kicking the shit out of Cyclonus and Scourge, which they actually were. When the beaten Decepticons go through some sort of portal and arrive on a world much like Cybertron before the wars. We find out that after the Fourth Great War happened on Cybertron, the inhabitants of Paradron escaped and wanted to find somewhere that the Decepticons would never find them, so they went through the Vortex. And I don't think the Combaticons Vortex was seen in this at all, even though they mentioned Vortex several times.
It was a Vortex, not the Vortex.
Well, yeah, I know, but still. You know, Ravage, Vortex, whatever, they still should be shown.
It's a black hole.
Yeah.
I think the black hole motif has been used way too much so far.
Oh, yeah, so far in Season 3, yeah.
It's like Paradron is inhabited by all the people that are in the wrong color.
Yes.
Hence the Paradron Medic.
Yeah.
The green RC.
Yeah, now keep in mind I did do these notes 3 months ago, so this episode has excellent animation, very crisp, and the color schemes are correct for the most part. However, Rodimus's scheme keeps changing. Ugh.
And you have photographic evidence to prove it.
Ow! Damn it.
That's what you get for leaving that lead pipe there hanging over your head.
Well, it wasn't a lead pipe, it was my monitor stand. Anyway...
That would hurt, too. I could see that. Yeah.
Yes, it is metal, and it's not shiny. seeing Cyclonus get more action is great, as well as seeing Razorclaw and Dive Bomb have appearances.
Yeah. Cyclonus had some great lines this time
around. Yeah, he did. Yes, very much so.
He says, "I retreat from nobody." Well, maybe just this once. And he flies away. Yeah. Cyclonus says, "We'll take cover in that black hole."
Yeah.
Of all the places to hide, I think I'm going to go hide in that black hole over there.
Yeah. Cyclonus makes Scourge his bitch. When Cyclonus says, "I take orders from no one except Galvatron," and then Scourge says, I take no orders from anyone except Galvatron as well," and then Scourge gives him a dirty look. He goes, "Oh, well, and Cyclonus."
He kind of looks at him like, ahem.
Bitch.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you know, I think the entire planet is kind of Cyclonus' bitch at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Cyclonus says, "Yes, they appear to be wimps."
They're Autobot wimps.
They all appear to be wimps. Yes. And the other line I thought was great was he says, "Everybody's got to be somewhere." Yeah. I love that. He throws him through a window, but no, it's a giant monitor. Somebody get me out! I'm stuck in a monitor! Yeah, that's where you're supposed to be. You just stick around in the monitor and you'll be fine.
Yes, I do remember that. I believe that's all I have for the synopsis. That's all the notes I had, so I guess we can move on to our thoughts, unless you have anything else to add.
As far as the synopsis goes, just a little bit in the sense that I didn't realize that Sandstorm was from Paradron.
I didn't even know who the fuck Sandstorm was until I saw this episode.
Oh, no, Sandstorm, he's a triple changer, which I love some triple changers, honestly. But I didn't realize that was his backstory.
Oh, I had no idea who he was until I actually saw this, so, you know, I don't know. So let's see here. As far as triple changer count, you have Astrotrain, Blitzwing, and Octane for the Decepticons. And Octane we will actually get to in Thief in the Night in the next episode we talk about.
Right.
And then you have Springer, Sandstorm, and who else for the Autobots?
Broadside.
Oh, yeah, Broadside. Yeah. I thought there was more than three, but okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I guess we're going to move on to our thoughts. All right, this is our thoughts for Flight, or Flight. Yeah, I'm Stan Bush, Flight or Flee. It's Fight or Flee. Okay, let's see. I don't have a whole lot of notes for this one because, as with the majority of the episodes today, I just didn't... Of course, I did all this like 3 months ago, so what'd you think?
I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot going on, basically. Some things that I took an issue with, in particular, the Aerobots actually laying a trap for Cyclonus and Scourge in the very beginning.
Yeah, I can kind of see where you take an issue with that, but I was going back and I read the I reread the synopsis in the booklet.
Uh-huh.
It says they were in an aerial battle with the Aerobots. It doesn't say whether, and we don't see the Aerobots actually go after. I mean, we see the chase, but we don't see like the initial what happened. Like if Scourge and Cyclonus started it first. You know,
I don't know. Taking their side. I see how it is.
That's right.
Well, no, I didn't really see it that way because basically you've got Cyclonus saying, "You know, we don't have time for this. I'm just going to blast him." And, mm-hmm. You know, as they're chasing the lone Aerobot through the asteroid belt, and that kind of gave me the impression that they were you know, they're on their way from one place to another. You know, they got things to do. Galvatron probably pointed them in a direction and they said, okay, we'll go. And they just happen to see an Autobot and he's giving him the finger like, fuck off! Yeah, yeah, can't get me! And he flies off and he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go kick his ass real quick and then we'll go do what we're supposed to do. And next thing you know, you've got all the Aerobots jumping out from behind an asteroid and ambushing them. That's not really fair. That's not really the way Autobots are supposed to be.
So basically you're saying that Galvatron is nothing but a compass for the rest of the Decepticons?
Well, no. I think that, well, you know how I feel about Galvatron. You know, there is no strategic value to Galvatron. It's,
yes.
Oh, look, there's something shiny, you know. And I think it's kind of up to, you know, Cyclonus and Scourge. Scourge, you know, follows Cyclonus everywhere, but it's kind of up to Cyclonus for the most part to, you know, be the brains of the outfit, or at least keep the whole thing from falling apart under Galvatron's rule.
Oh yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, but you know, at the same point, it's you know, these Aerobots ganging up on poor Cyclonus, and. You know, basically beating the crap out of him. And you know, to add insult to injury, not only are they ambushing two, so it's like, you know, five against two, they're ambushing them, but then they combine into a super robot. And how are you supposed to compete with that?
You know, talk about a gangbang.
No, it's only one against two. Yeah, it's much better. And Scourge slams headfirst directly into Superion's chest. You know, and Cyclonus says, are you okay? And he's like, I don't know, man, I'm all fucked up, man. This hurt a lot. It's like, well, of course it hurt. You hit head first directly into Superion's chest. That's going to hurt like a bitch. You know, of course they're going to get the hell out of there.
Oh, crap. That's funny. This is one of those episodes that I can take it or leave it. It isn't one that I can... Just this isn't like okay, say for example I have a need to watch G1. This isn't an episode that I put the disc in and say, oh, I must watch Fight or Flee. It's a must watch for me. I must do this right now.
Yeah.
Nah, I'd rather blow the fucker up.
I think you said the same thing about Wimworld.
Well, yeah, that too.
That one too.
Yeah, Webworld sucks. But anyway, you know, I do like the storyline. I like the fact that they are tying in more Autobot or I guess it would be Transformers history together. with right. Panadron and or Panadrone or Paradrone. Whatever the fuck it's called. Drone, drone, whatever.
Paris
yeah, Paris. No, I don't want to see Paris Hilton slacks. Thank you very much.
I want to see them as far away from her as possible.
Talk about something soiled. So anyway.
You're going to hear from her lawyers now.
I don't give a fuck. Yeah, like she really listens to this show. She didn't even know what a giant robot is. Optimus Prime could whip his dick out and she wouldn't know what to do with it.
Oh, man. I think you're going to offend many a fanboy with that one. Or you've inspired a whole genre of us, slash fic. We don't know. Well,
oh, crap.
Yeah, exactly. Who was the guy who mentioned Rodimus Prime, or Optimus Prime? With the, yeah. Anyway. Speaking of Rodimus Prime, and getting back to my original point of Autobots not really acting very Autobot-ly, you know, basically, Rodimus Prime shows up to this planet and says, "Hey, we're here to liberate your planet. You know, we're here to free you from this Decepticon rule that you found yourself under accidentally. You know, because you won't fight." And you know, the populace basically says, "No, we're pacifists. We're not gonna fight." You know, he basically lands on a planet full of Democrats. You know, we're not gonna fight, and that's not how we are. That's not our way. And Rodimus basically says, "Well, it is now, and you know you're gonna do this." He's basically basically tearing their ideals from them. It's like this is who we are. We're pacifists. We don't believe in fighting. And it's like no, you're gonna fight. And you know to eliminate any question whatsoever, we're gonna have Skyling shit out a huge cache of guns. And he just lands and there they go.
First of all, he did not shit out a whole cache full of guns. They come out of his back. They did not come out of his exhaust port or ass or whatever the hell you want to call it. Second of all, okay, say for example that a huge dictatorship comes into your town in bumfuck Indiana, wherever. You know, and says, right. "We're going to take this house over. We're going to kick your ass out. Your siding's not done yet, and we're just going to say the hell with it, and you're just going to have to go to hell." Are you going to fight to keep your home, or are you going to flee? That's the whole point of the episode title.
Well, you see,
my ideals
don't include pacifism, though. I mean, I'm trying to put it into perspective, though. Right. Well, you know, but here's the deal, though. Rodimus comes in and says, "You know, we're going to liberate your planet. Here's the means to do so." You know, and they all run into the giant pile of guns and say, "Well, okay, fine. You're not going to call us a bunch of pussies. We're gonna fight back." Well, so here they are throwing their ideals to the wind. And what's Rodimus Prime's next decision? "Okay, this is hard. We're never going to get rid of these Decepticons. Everybody fall back, and we're just going to blow up the planet."
Yes, and Cybertron's a better place anyways.
Yeah, now that you've sacrificed your ideals, now that you're no longer who you were previously, we're just going to blow up your utopian society. And isn't that, I mean, that's just raw. It's not very Autobot to me. It's not the Autobot way. Yeah. It's like, not only are we going to blow up your planet, but hey, how about we gather you all up on this asteroid so that you can have front row seats while we explode it. Oh, look, it's so pretty.
Oh, crap. Now that you bring that up, the only thing that I can think of is Steve Buscemi in Armageddon. Well, at least we have a front row seat to the end of the world.
The end of the world, that's right. Here goes your planet. And Rodimus says, "Well, you know, your utopia kind of sucked anyway." So,
But, I mean, if you look at utopian type, you know, things in, you know, TV, cartoons, whatever, books, you know, generally this is probably the exception. They were all pacifists. They were all basically wimpy Autobots, like Cyclonus said. But, I mean, most utopian stuff, there is something going on underneath that is evil and sinister. Best example I can think of is the last Superman the Animated Series episode, The Last Son of Krypton, where Brainiac is hiding the fact that the planet's going to be destroyed, and they have this utopian rule where Brainiac, whatever he says, goes. And I did like the fact that Sandstorm, even though before this episode I had no idea who the fuck Sandstorm was, I did like the fact that he brought up the fact that the forefathers of that originally founded Panandrol or whatever the hell it's called, would say, yes, we need to fight for our beliefs and for our planet to save it. And he even says in the end, you know, it was beautiful in death as it was in life.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a shame that people we don't even know had to show up and blow it up for us. Yeah, thanks, Rodimus. Appreciate that. That was real nice of you.
You're just a Rodimus Prime hater. That's all it is.
I do. You know, Rodimus Prime's famous last words, I got it handled. He's like, they're coming in on the shuttle. I got it handled. And then the Decepticons, phew, right through the moon. Just shoot them right. It's like, you know, we're a damn good shot. We don't learn from our mistakes, because every time we shoot one of those shuttles, they're actually floating somewhere just outside of the shuttle. But we're a damn good shot. We hit them right through that moon.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, you know, it's, I don't have a whole lot of respect for Rodimus. I'm going to have to come back and reiterate this on the episode where Prime comes back.
The Return of Optimus Prime.
That's right. Give me back that Matrix, bitch. I may have been dead, but my pimp hand is still strong.
Oh, my God. I think that's the second time you've said that on this podcast. Give me back that Matrix, you bitch.
That's right, you piece of shit. You hand that back right fucking now. I'm going to smack you down.
So do you have any other thoughts on Fight or Flee before we head into the final episode of today?
Oh, no, I believe that about covers it.
Yeah, I'd have to say it's pretty much a throwaway episode for the most part.
You know, Green RC, who doesn't want a Green RC, honestly? Green RC grabbing her ass while flying a pink Springer.
Here we go. Oh, yeah, just, okay.
That's right, that would be that picture from the Negative Universe.
Talk about a bad repaint, holy crap.
No, they have Paradrone Medic repaints.
Oh, do they?
Okay, yeah, have you ever seen one?
No. Anyway, alright, up next is Thief in the Night.
I thought you said we were near Fort Knox, Private Dixon.
We were, I mean, we are. I mean, it used to be here.
Octane, my friend. I will admit that you and Trypticon have not done such a bad job. I have made my decision. You may remain in Carbonia, but only until the next crescent moon. And Trypticon will be on strict rations of 1,000 barrels of oil a day.
1,000 a day? He'll starve! We'll both starve!
If you don't like my offer, I'll call in the Autobots.
A most unfortunate occurrence.
Pitiful.
Outrageous.
Whoever it was just made off with Fort Knox like a thief in the night.
And lastly up today, we have Thief in the Night. Oh, God.
Oh,
here we go.
God.
Let's see. Yeah. Octane is on the run from Galvatron and wants leadership of the Decepticons for himself. He convinces Trypticon to head to the oil-producing nation of Carbomia, where they can consume all of the Energon they want in exchange for performing an occasional task for the country's sovereign, Abdul Fakadi. I think there's a play on words there, but I'm not going to go there. But Fakadi doesn't stop them, and orders his new metal mobsters to steal numerous national monuments, including the Taj Mahal and the Eiffel Tower. And the Kremlin.
The Kremlin, yeah.
And the Kremlin. Well, I was reading, and I'm like, okay,
you
there's
got
two.
The Eiffel Tower,
wait, there's
right?
three. Yeah, the Fort Eiffel Knox. Tower, the Taj Mahal, and the Kremlin. Well, it doesn't say Fort Knox in the thing, but we can talk about it. This episode starts with a Metroplex Trypticon fight shown on Teletran 2. Grimlock wants to see the end where Trypticon got finished off by Metroplex, and Teletran 2 is like, that did not happen. I think, and then Rodimus pipes up, I think what he means to say is when he threw him off the cliff into the ocean. And actually, that is referencing an episode that we have already
seen.
Was
that actually flashback? Is that the same footage? Or was that new footage?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it was the same footage from, I believe it was Five Faces of Darkness.
Yeah, I was wondering if they actually used the same footage.
Yeah, I think they did. It might have been different. It might have been angled differently, but I think it was the same footage.
Yeah, cheap.
It was the 80s. Shut up.
We don't have enough money to make new footage, damn you.
Ah, yes, my correctness comes true to this next note I have. The Autobots realize that Metroplex never truly finished Trypticon off, and they send out Broadside and Sea Spray to investigate, and Broadside does have a voice. I don't know who played him, but he does have a voice.
Broadside showed up in a previous episode and he talked.
I know, but you said it wasn't Broadside, you said it was somebody else. That's what you said. Go back and listen to episode 17. I was right.
Well, no, in that episode I said that it wasn't Broadside at all. It was just a plane that happened to look like Broadside. And we've seen a lot of those. And you were saying, no, it was Broadside. I heard him talk. And I'm thinking, I don't think it was him talking. I think it was somebody else talking.
No, it was him talking. But anyway, turns out Trypticon is walking in the bottom of the ocean until he reaches Carbonia.
Like Gojira.
What?
Gojira. Who walks on the bottom of the ocean.
Going to the next
place where he's going to blow up.
Yeah.
Like Tokyo. Japanese. Every time he's terrorizing Tokyo, he's coming out of the ocean, out of the water.
Okay, how the fuck can Trypticon eat Energon cubes with a gun in his mouth? Because if you notice in his mouth, he has the blasters. Yeah. The two twin blasters that are supposed to be his tongue.
They serve as a big straw.
How can he...
He's got like a silly straw that comes out.
Oh my god.
Little loops.
Okay. Through his stupidity, Grimlock says something useful, given the Autobots a clue as to who took Fort Knox. Grimlock says it has dinosaur Energon...
Has dinosaur
energy
like dinosaur.
Surrounding inner, something or other, and then of course the Autobots, which I hate. They pretty much pulled a Sentinel Prime thing, you know, 40 years or 25
That's
years
right.
early, where they're like, oh, it's got to be the Dinobots. We're gonna interrogate everybody and accuse everybody
of
everything.
Call in the usual dinosaur suspects, line them up,
exactly.
including Skylynx, because he's shifty eyed. You know, he did it.
These
guys together lined up couldn't lift up Fort Knox by themselves, but you know it's one of them.
Yeah. I don't need to see another Carbomia episode ever again. I don't remember why I wrote that note, but I think we've had two Carbomia episodes. The one last episode, I forget what the episode title was, but the one where, I think it was last episode where Blaster Blaster and Outback are trying to find the Decepticon jets. I think it was last episode. I don't know, but I know there's been two that have had Carbomia as a backdrop. More Metroplex versus Trypticon battling, which I think is pretty cool. And again, last note, Rodimus Prime's color scheme is non-movie in this one. I'm so sick of it going back and forth in each fucking episode.
Yeah, at the end of the episode, he actually turns black.
I did
yeah,
not
it's like
notice
black
that.
Rodimus, and I'm thinking this would make an awesome E-Hobby repaint. You know, an E-Hobby exclusive repaint. But he's mostly black. He's still got... kind of like a black Winnebago, you know, with the flames on it.
Yeah. It's kind of like the toy that has purple flame, has purple under the orange flames on the side.
Oh, yeah. There's a little bit of purple there. But, I've seen a black Rodimus, but... Yeah.
A G1 version,
no,
really?
No, we're talking like the Japanese...
Shattered Glass?
No, well... Yeah, I guess they did make a black and purple Rodimus and Shattered Glass. Yeah.
Yeah, shattered glass is the only black one I've ever seen.
If you look at the when the Japanese reissues came out, I want to say back in 2000, they put out a black version and a clear version. They were sharp. They were really cool. I wish I had one, but they're hard to find.
All right. Do you have any more thoughts on the synopsis?
I think. Well, you know, yes, I do. Yes, I do. most of what I have here is really our thoughts. But synopsis wise, Swindle would have been awesome for this role rather than Octane.
Oh yeah, very much.
I don't
so.
Know if they just wanted to use Octane because he's a triple changer, which he didn't really highlight that ability very much here.
It'll be highlighted next episode.
Yeah, but I'm thinking maybe they just use Octane because it's an oil episode. You know, we're dealing.
That could be it, but I don't get where he betrayed Galvatron other than, okay, yeah, he did kind of take Trypticon from Dinobot Island because that is said in the story.
Right.
But, I mean, like, before this episode, I don't think before this episode we've ever seen Octane. I don't remember him. Is he part of a certain... Is he part of, like... He's not part of the Stunticons. Is he part of the Combaticons?
No.
I don't think
he's just the triple changer.
Okay. Yeah,
but the fact that he turns into an oil truck, it kind of makes sense because this is an oil episode. But, no, the whole plot just screams Swindle to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I think we're going to move on to our thoughts for this final episode today. All right, this is the thoughts section for the final episode today. What the hell is the name of the episode? Oh, yeah.
Thief in the Night.
Thief in the Night. Thief in the Night, that's right. All right, what'd you think?
Well, I liked it in the sense that it's got Trypticon and Megatron. Metroplex. Megatron would have kicked ass. It would have been like, I am mighty Megatron, and I'm going to kick everyone's ass. No, it's Metroplex and Trypticon, and anytime you get giant Transformers battling it out, it's a cool thing.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
But they had a scene...
I've noticed... Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. But I was going to say, they had a scene with Metroplex parked on Autobot City. And I was thinking, you know, I thought that's where he went. As far as, you know, how he was supposed to fit into the city. But I couldn't remember ever seeing it that way before.
Yeah, I don't even remember seeing that scene. What I was going to say was, we've seen Metroplex more recently in robot mode for the majority. We don't really see him as city. Actually, in this episode, Trypticon, right next to the palace, does transform into his city mode and becomes this battle station that he is and starts firing on the incoming Autobots, but, I mean, I don't think I've seen Metroplex as an actual city the last couple of episodes today.
Well, I think, as far as Trypticon go, or Tryptobabes, as Octane calls him, Tryptobaby, they showed him in battle station mode, but I don't think they've ever shown him in city mode. Maybe, I think during the commercial cutscenes, he transforms into a city mode, but in the episode itself, they only showed him in battle station. They showed Metroplex in battle station too.
Yeah, I don't remember. So I don't know. What else you got?
You got Trypticon. He comes in. He steals Fort Worth or Fort Fort Knox.
Fort Knox.
Yeah, Fort Worth. He steals the entire city of Texas. Or city in Texas. You know what I mean. I don't even have a cold this time. I have no excuse. but he steals Fort Knox and picks it up, and everybody goes, "Oh no!" It's like in the bridge scene in Star Trek where people get where the ship is being bombarded with you know enemy blasts, and everybody on the bridge is kind of going, as they run back and forth trying to simulate the movement. But yeah, so inside Fort Knox, all the soldiers are going, and then all the bricks are falling. But in the next scene, you've got Gaddafi, and he's kind of inspecting Fort Knox, and all the bricks are stacked. Who stacked all these bricks?
Yeah, that's... That's an animation flub.
Those things are damn heavy. Who's going to restack all those?
Maybe they had Trypticon to
them. Yeah, yeah. He's like, one, two, stacking them all up. Yeah, I was going to say, the. I'm not sure what the what play on words you thought the Karbamian leader was, but I believe he was supposed to be Omar Gaddafi from Libya.
Could be.
Because, yeah, I mean, the name kind of sounds like Gaddafi. It's got the same syllables.
Yeah, Fukati or, Fukati or whatever. Oh, that's what it was.
What?
Okay, get it? Fukati.
Fuck-adi?
Fuck hottie.
Fuck the hottie?
Yeah.
Fuck the hottie.
I don't know.
Fairmore's not even in this episode.
She ain't even really that hot anyway.
Well,
Never mind. Let's not go there. That's a rat hole.
I know. It's like, wait a minute. Where's the pic of Fairmore grabbing her ass and flying down Springer? moving right along.
Yeah, really.
I did the math. Trypticon drinks wait a minute, is eating all these Energon cubes, right? You're drinking the Energon cubes. And Fukati says that each cube is 1,000 barrels of oil. And Trypticon eats 50 cubes per hour. If there are 24 hours in a day, that would be 1,200,000 barrels of oil per day.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. I'm not even sure most countries produce that much per day.
No, I don't think so.
So Trypticon is conceivably eating the entire, output of Karbamia every day.
Yep.
Karbamia with 4,000 people, 10,000 camels.
Yeah, I meant to pause it on that sign, and I never did. I never saw what the number
was.
Oh,
I went back. 4,000 people, 10,000 camels. And I'm thinking... Oh. You know, what's the demographics on that? Is it like two camels for every man? All of our women are running around in the burkas, and we can't really see their faces, but the camels are looking damn fine around
those
parts.
Oh, my God. Okay, do you have any other relevant, non-just weird, off-the-wall to this?
You know, I thought it was cool that Metroplex put all the buildings back.
Yeah.
It was kind of a given. Yeah, how else are they going to do it? But they did a few minutes at the end to kind of show him doing it.
Yes.
And that was a nice thing. It was a nice touch.
Yes, it was.
But, no, overall, it was a quick episode. It kind of came and went.
Yeah, most of the episodes today kind of came and went, and thank God they did, because,
Well, I don't know. Some episodes, like Carnage and C Minor, I had a lot of notes for that one just because it was so awful. And Fight or Flee.
Shut the hell up.
Fight or Flee, I had a lot of notes for that one, too. I mean, whereas Thief in the Night, probably half a page.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this kind of, I think the majority of the episode was Trypticon coming in and these two giant claws coming out of the clouds and picking up landmarks and walking off with them.
Yes.
It's kind of light on plot and light on... light on interesting things happening.
Yeah, not a whole lot of interesting things happening in this batch. Other than, like we said, Forever's a Long Time Coming. I think that was the best one out of the batch today.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think we're going to end this episode. Stay tuned for some ads.
The Volcano headquarters for the Autobots on Earth was destroyed in a Decepticon attack. Now, in the year 2006, Autobot City has become the new Autobot Earth base. Autobot City is also a transformer known as Metroplex, with the capacity to transform from city mode to a battle station or to a giant robot. Metroplex is the Autobot's last line of defense, the robot they depend upon when all other options fail.
Metroplex is my kind of town!
When Metroplex transforms to a robot, some of his modular components form smaller, separate robots. Six-Gun, the ideal defensive battle scout. Slammer, the tank. And Scamper, the tough little car that births in Metroplex's city ramp. to counter the power of Metroplex on Earth, the Decepticons have built Decepticon City, known as Trypticon. The city can transform to battle station mode, becoming a mobile menace with X-ray lasers and twin photon cannons. Trypticon also has a dinosaur mode, an immense walking reptilian form that crushes anything in its path. Metroplex and Trypticon are each other's deadliest enemies. Whenever they approach one another, they lock in battle and engage in incredible combat. And the victor in their epic struggles may someday turn the tide of battle in favor of either the Decepticons or the Autobots. Which will it be? The Quintessons are sinister robotic creatures with five-sided heads, each side with a different face, including the face of death. These tentacled beings who travel on beams of energy are cruel and emotionless, and the creators of all the Transformers on Cybertron millions of years ago. The Quintessons never intended their intelligent machines to develop emotions. But to their horror, the Transformers rose up against their masters and drove them away from Cybertron. The Quintessons retreated to a planet they named Quintessa, where they lived a stark and barren existence with their Sharpticon guards. Sinister and vicious, lacking any individualistic intelligence, the Sharpticons usually serve as executioners for their Quintesson masters, who toss condemned victims into the Sharpticon pit. The Quintessons finally decided to blow up their planet, Quintessa.
I shall miss Quintessa.
To try to prevent Autobot captives and invaders from escaping. Their plot to destroy the Autobots' fate. And now, without a world of their own, they roam the universe with their Sharpticons, making victims of whatever luckless beings cross their path. Their goal is to regain control of Cybertron and eradicate all Autobots and Decepticons. Yet, so manipulative and cunning are they that they even trick the Decepticons into helping them achieve their aim.
Very soon now, Cybertron will be ours!
The Transformers will return after these messages.
You got the touch!
I'm Stan Bush, and I dare you to listen to All Things Transformers with Steve Megatron and TFG1 Mike.
To the Transformers.
Well, that is all for this episode of the TFG1 podcast. Join us next time when we'll be reviewing five more episodes from Transformers Generation 1 Season 3. Those being Starscream's Ghost, Ghost in the Machine, Dweller in the Depths, Nightmare Planet, which I absolutely fucking hate that episode, and The Ultimate Weapon. Mr. Wilson here may or may not be joining us for episode 20, depending on if he can watch the episodes by this coming Friday evening. Most likely it will be myself and Steve Megatron doing episode 20. So yeah, that's a little bit of a programming note for everybody. And really quick, before I go into the rest of the closing, I would like to send out a special thanks to Decepticon Crescendo and Stan Bush for getting my original 1986 CD signed. I've talked about it before on Geekcast Radio and All Things Transformers, and yeah, it's just super, super awesome. I gotta go find a glass case for this thing.
Huge shout out to DC.
DC?
Decepticon.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, why the hell are we talking about DC Comics in this podcast? So, anyway.
I'm a Marvel, and he's a DC.
Fuck DC. Anyway, thank you for joining us on the TFG1 podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us or leave feedback for the podcast. The first is you can visit the PredaconEmpire.com forums and get all your Transformers discussion topics there. The second is you can follow us on Twitter. Mine over there is TFG1 podcast, and yours is
Pecan Court Michael. PECANCTMICHAEL.
MOUSE. No, just kidding.
Now I know my ABCs. Next time, won't you sing with me?
Okay, stop.
See, now I should have been singing through Carnage and C
minor. No, you shouldn't have. Now stop. The third is you can visit the Earth2.net forums. I have a thread over there for the podcast under the self-promotion section. The fourth is the email address, which is tfg1podcast@gmail.com. The fifth way that you can help us out, really help us out, is going to iTunes and leaving us positive feedback. 5 stars is preferred, and you can write a little review. You know, it doesn't have to be like a whole paragraph or, you know, whole, you know, book on what you like and what you don't like about the show. Just, you know, a couple of things that you may want to say about the show. Please leave us iTunes feedback because, the show's almost over. We have 4 episodes left. And for now, I am Michael Blanchard with
Michael Wilson,
singing the immortal words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out. And thank you for listening. Until next time.